I've missed you. His gaze devours me, but he does a good job of quickly looking away. Same. I lay my jacket on the first row of stone seats beside my classmates, leaving me in traditional sparring gear. Is this where you've been hiding out? Welcome to your first session of Signet sparring, in what I like to call the pit, he announces as we reach the base of the steps. The floor is laid in an arched cobblestone pattern of various shades, but only 5 or so feet are visible before the mat begins. Those who can wield, keep your feet on the rock, but, and I cannot stress this enough, off the mat. Those who cannot, take a seat in the first row. He gestures to the terraced stone behind us and cadets move. If by hiding out you mean constructing incredibly complex wards that might make even your sister proud, then yes. And it's not like you've been accessible. Bodhi says you're either reading with Andarna as a backrest or wielding alone in the range. 1 hour a day, that's what I've promised myself. No matter how cold it is or how tired I am, I'm on the ridgeline with Tarn, practicing smaller, more concise strikes until my arms feel like jelly. I spend a lot of time in the library, too. I roll my shoulders, then take my place between Riddick and Rhiannon, keeping 2 rows back from the mat as I secure the strap of the conduit through the loop on the left side of my waist. Quest Squad may be headed north, but I'm still reading everything I can find on Devarelli, which isn't nearly enough. And the tomes on Dark Wielders both Queen Mariah and Takaris have sent. Though there's been no hint of a cure or mention of a dragon ever torching a Venon, like Andarna did. Maybe it's a good thing I can't spend all my nighttime hours with Zayden, or I wouldn't be flying through books like I am. Let's go. It shouldn't be this hard to sort yourselves out. His gaze wanders to mine. Quest Squad? Riddick gave it a nickname and it stuck. I shrug as the other squad fills in to the right of our third years, standing in our mirror image, oldest at the center of the arc. Atos leaves for his trip to Caldeer soon, so we've been preparing to get into my parents'. I wince. His quarters. Need my help? He scans over our line, no doubt assessing strengths and weaknesses. No, but I'll let you know if that changes. I bend my left knee, testing to be sure the wrap is still in place. Doesn't matter how often Brennan mends me, that particular joint never stays healed for long. Any chance you can sneak away to Shantara this weekend? We're dragging Sawyer out. I hope you have a great time, but watching you across the pub sounds like torture. His jaw ticks. I think we had more time together when I was stationed at Samara. Agreed, but you're safe here. I take stock of who we have on the floor. On Rhiannon's right, Bragan and Nev, the third-year flyers, stand with Imogen and Quinn, and to Riddick's left are Traeger, Kat, Marin, Baylor, Evelyn, Sloane, and Kai. Arik and Lynx are seated behind us, and it catches me off guard to realize that all 4 of the first years in the first wing squad are sitting too. Dragons are taking their time when it comes to channeling. Safe is starting to feel overrated. He looks toward first wing. You done gossiping among yourselves? We were just saying that we're not sure someone who graduated less than 1 year ago makes the best teacher. Lauren Yashel folds his arms. The cocky third year with bright purple locks is one of the best fighters in their wing. Oh, shit, Rhiannon whispers. A corner of my lips rises. They've earned whatever Zayden is about to dish out. Let's see if you can take me down and settle that worry right now. Zayden crooks his fingers. You're a metallurgist, right? My heart twinges. Sawyer should be here too, I whisper to Rhi. Yeah, well, everything I've tried to convince him has failed. Her mouth tenses. Shit. You're doing your best. I didn't mean... Her shoulders dip. I know.
Metallurgist, Lauren nods. So these are nice and sharp.
He walks onto the mat, drawing the sword from his hip and a dagger from his waist.
Good for you.
Zayden claps twice, but keeps his feet planted apart on the mat.
I hope they help.
Lauren lifts his sword and circles Zayden to the left.
Are you gonna draw a weapon?
We'll see, Zayden shrugs, his eyes tracking Lauren's movements.
Now, do us both a favor and don't hold back. Begin.
Lauren charges and my ribs tighten like a vice around my lungs. Zayden doesn't move. Lauren runs until he's 3 feet from Zayden, then thrusts his sword forward, keeping his dagger tucked at his side. My breath catches as Zayden lets the blade come within inches of his chest, then sidesteps and slams his left fist on top of Lauren's wrist. Lauren shouts as the sword falls, but he's already pivoting towards Zayden before the blade hits the mat, his left arm swinging in an arc that's aimed at slicing open Zayden's jugular. Zayden grabs hold of Lauren's forearm and spins, yanking the appendage behind Lauren's back and driving his elbow upward until Lauren cries out in painful frustration. Then he plucks the dagger from Lauren's hand and releases him with a shove forward.
The fucking nerve on that one, Riddick mutters, shaking his head. If he'd waited a second later.
But he didn't, because he knew exactly what Lauren intended. A slow smile spreads across my face. I've always loved watching you on the mat.
I know. Zayden rolls his neck. I've used it to my advantage a few times.
Of course he has. Lauren stumbles, but to his credit, immediately turns to face Zayden again. Zayden flicks the dagger and lodges it in the mat between Lauren's feet.
You threw too much energy into the charge. Using brute force instead of finesse is a first-year tactic.
He cocks his head to the side and studies Lauren with a look that's almost bored.
Now that we've proven I'm capable of kicking your ass without breaking a sweat or holding steel, what do you say we get to the point of the class and wield?
Zayden lifts his arms at a 90-degree angle, palms up. Lauren swallows and keeps both eyes on Zayden as he retrieves his weapons.
Begin, Zayden orders.
Lauren shifts his weight, and there's a definite sheen of panic in his eyes as he circles Zayden again. To my utter consternation, the man I love doesn't even look as Lauren creeps around his back. No, instead of following his opponent's moves, Zayden looks my way and fucking winks as Lauren attacks from behind, the sword transforming, lengthening as he strikes. In fact, he holds my gaze unflinchingly until Lauren raises his blade a few feet from his neck. Then, Zayden glances down at his left where the blade's shadow stretches past his boot, elongated by the afternoon sun, and lifts a single finger. The shadow rushes back on Lauren and within a heartbeat wraps around his throat and arm. Zayden steps to the side as Lauren falls to his knees in the very space Zayden had stood, and the sword falls too, abandoned as Lauren grabs for the shadows tightening around his throat. His face blotches, and the other squad starts to shift uncomfortably before Zayden drops his hands. The shadow falls back into position, and Lauren gasps for air.
I'm either completely in love with your boyfriend or utterly terrified of him, Riddick says under his breath. Not sure at the moment.
Both, Kat answers from his left. You can be both. Trust me.
You shouldn't be either, Traeger mutters.
Riddick glances my way and rolls his eyes. I bite back my smile. I'm never scared of him. Zayden's eyes find mine and my pulse skips. And he's not my boyfriend. Reese snorts and Riddick offers me a sarcastic thumbs up.
Agreed, Zayden says. That's far too casual a term for what we are.
His gaze drops to Lauren, who's still heaving for breath on the mat.
Get up.
Lauren staggers to his feet and runs his hand over the purple bruise forming on his throat.
I have 2 swords and 4 daggers strapped to me, Zayden tells him. And you didn't think to heat them, twist them, manipulate them in any way?
I used my sword, Lauren starts.
Foolish choice. Get back to your squad. Zayden dismisses him, and Lauren retrieves his weapons before retreating.
I'm sure you all noticed the weather ward we have in place to keep you nice and comfortable for these first few lessons. But what you don't see is that the area of the mat has been protected by the best ward weavers in Navarre. He flares his hands, and shadows run from his feet, expanding in every direction in a cloud of darkness that flies toward us, only to slam against an invisible barrier and flow upward. They withdraw with unnerving speed, clearing the air in front of us in a matter of heartbeats. With only a couple of exceptions, he glances my way, whatever you wield will stay between the opponents on the mat. And I'm assured your signets will not leave the amphitheater or endanger the campus. So when I tell you not to hold back, I mean it, because the Venin won't. Next. One by one, he sets just about everyone on their ass. They put a fire wielder against him, and he dodges the flame, her own shadows taking her out at the knees with a flick of his wrist. Quinn steps up and creates two versions of herself. And when shadows tug her feet from under her, the real Quinn falls and the projection dissipates. Rhiannon has her own blade plucked from her grasp and lifted to her throat by a wisp of shadow. Caroline barely gets her hands up before Zayden knocks her backward with a stream of shadow that propels her across the mat and forces her onto the stone. Nev steps onto the mat, gripping her daggers, then uses lesser magic to levitate them. Now that's fun, Zayden says with a grin as they race toward him, only to be grasped by shadow and returned with their tips poised to strike above her collarbones. She puts up her hands, and the shadows fall, dropping the blades to the mat. Point made? Zayden asks as Nev retrieves her blades and steps back into line. I never need to draw a sword, because I am the weapon. I'm just good with blades for the fun of it.
No,
Lauren says, his voice still hoarse.
You handing everyone their ass on the mat isn't anything new from last year.
Correct, Zayden lifts a scarred brow. Up until now, when we spar or challenge, our priority has been to beat our opponent at all costs. That means we train in private, we find an edge, a corner of his mouth lifts. Like poisoning our opponent. He slides his hand into his pockets. And we keep our tactics secret because we need that edge on the mat. The difference between my position as cadet last year, even as a wing leader, and now is that as your teacher, I want to give you my edge. I want you to learn not just from me, but from one another. I'll help expose the weaknesses in your signet so that when you come up against a dark wielder with such a power, you will have already practiced how to defeat them. Each of you has something to learn, and I'm here to keep you safe while you do it.
And what about the ones who can't wield signets? Caroline asks. They're just the practice dummies?
Kat scoffs.
We're far from helpless.
She turns a withering glare on Caroline.
You can try your water wielding on me, but I'll already be in your head, turning your emotions against you.
She's good at it, too, I admit, shifting the majority of my weight to my right leg. You'll find that mind work can be just as deadly, Zayden agrees. And if you haven't learned how to shield, I suggest you spend some time with Professor Carr before facing off against a flyer or anyone wearing a classified patch. He glances at Imogen.
And you're going to teach us how to defeat you?
Arik asks from behind us. A corner of Zayden's mouth slowly curves upward.
I can teach you to try,
but there's only one person capable of taking me down one day. And it isn't you, Gray Castle. My cheeks heat as heads swing my way.
Let's get back to it while you have some relative privacy. As of next week, the infantry cadets will be sitting in so they stand half a chance on the battlefield.
Zayden scans the line.
Gamlin, you're next.
Riddick ends up caged by a set of icicles of his own making. Sloane retreats from the arena with her hands tied in shadow behind her back, after not even trying. I glance at her rebellion relic and wonder if she's hiding a second signet too. Neither Kat nor Marin get close before they're off the mat and sent stumbling in our direction. But Kat is the only one of the pair who looks momentarily devastated at having failed.
You're going to get over him at some point, right?
Traeger mutters as Kat falls back in line.
Seems like a waste of time to chase someone who doesn't want you
when there are plenty of people who do.
Kat's gaze snaps in his direction and I lift my brows.
Go Traeger.
And then Zayden lifts his brow at me.
No exceptions, Soren Gale.
Now this is what I've been waiting to see. Caroline bounces on her toes like a child.
Do me a favor, I say to Zayden, unfastening the conduit's leather strap at my hip and hooking it over my wrist so the orb fits comfortably in my palm.
Then I take 3 steps forward onto the mat and open the door to Tarn's power with a hell of a smirk.
Don't let me hurt you.
Posted Bulletin, Village of Shantara, transcribed by Percival Fitzgibbons. It is hereby suggested strongly that neither bonded dragon nor griffin shall be allowed to land or hunt in a 1-mile vicinity of the village of Shantara in order to sustain the endeavors of our sheep herders through this surge of demand. Chapter 16.
Arrogant, are we?
His flash of an undeniable smile is there and gone before I can fully succumb to its knee-wobbling effect.
Let's see how you do in the dark.
Shadows fill the mat and devour every ounce of sunlight, leaving me in complete and total darkness in every direction I look. Challenge accepted. This is playing dirty. I lift the conduit to just above my shoulders and release a steady flow of power from my left hand. The orb crackles, catching the tendrils of lightning as it imbues the alloy at its center and illuminating the area directly surrounding me.
You already have the upper hand,
he replies, and a strand of shadow caresses my cheek, but doesn't take form any closer to the conduit.
I'm just leveling the playing field.
I walk forward, catching a glimpse of him before he fades into darkness once more.
Strike, he orders.
And chance actually hitting you? I think not. My left arm heats, and I grit my teeth against the strain of sustaining the power flow. It's so much easier to strike than trickle.
Use our pathway to track me down.
His lips brush the back of my neck, and a jolt of awareness races down my spine, but when I spin, he's already gone. That's cheating. I walk left, then forward, then turn around again, completely lost as to which direction I'm facing.
It's using every tool at your disposal,
he points out.
Come on, Violence. Live up to the nickname. I could have killed you 12 times over by now because you're reluctant to strike.
And I could kill you with a single non-hypothetical strike. I open my senses, but it's impossible to concentrate on our pathways while my body channels continuously.
Fuck it. It's not like I can see through this anyway. Lowering my arm, I cut the flow of power from my fingertips and shadows rush over me, cooling my heated skin.
I focus on our connection, on the bond, and obey the subtle, barely perceptible tug that comes from my right.
Good.
The bond strengthens when he talks, and I change direction slightly following the connection.
I can wield from anything that casts a shadow, but no one knows the strongest threads are always my own. If you can sort through them, feel their difference, you'll be able to track where I am in the darkness.
Is that really what you need me to learn? I run my hands through shadow, but it all feels the same.
You have to learn the difference, for both our sakes.
The bond surrounds me in the same instant that he wraps his arms around me from behind, and a stronger shadow, his, tilts my chin toward my shoulder and up.
Only you.
His mouth finds mine in the darkness, and he kisses me long and slow, like we're the only people in the world, like our time is infinite, and there is nothing more important than hearing my next sigh. It's utterly decadent, thorough, and only makes me want more. My pulse leaps, racing faster with every stroke of his perfect tongue.
Strike, he demands, his fingers sliding down my stomach and slipping under my waistband, or someone might think I'm taking it easy on you.
He nips my bottom lip.
Easy is the opposite of what I want from you.
Power rises, humming through me with insistent demand, and I lift my right hand, aiming my palm toward the sky of the open amphitheater. Zayden vanishes from behind me a second before I release the strike.
Light flashes, illuminating the arena as lightning streaks upward, through the barrier of the wards and into the clouds above, and I hear the other cadets' collective gasps before the darkness descends again.
"You're astounding," he says, already one of the shadows.
"Why only me?" I ask, turning endlessly to find him.
"You need to be able to find me."
Shadows rush against my skin, and less than a breath later, they're gone, leaving me stumbling near the front of the mat, staring at Zayden's retreating back as he climbs the stairs.
"Class is over. I expect you all to come prepared next session," he says over his shoulder.
"Why only me?" I repeat, more than aware of the other cadets staring as I find my balance, studying me as if hoping to discover a mark since Zayden walked away unscathed.
"Zayden!"
He doesn't so much as pause his assent.
"Because you're the only one capable of killing me."
And then there's Violet, Riddick says the next afternoon, waving his mug of ale as we sit at the corner table of the Six Talons pub in Shantara. "Scaring off the professor with a lightning strike. He got the fuck out of there and left her stumbling around in the dark."
Sawyer laughs, really, truly laughs. And I don't care if it's from his second mug of ale or if Amari herself dragged it out of him. I'm just relieved to hear it. For a second, it feels like we have him back, like we're all us. The door opens across the room and snow blows in before someone manages to shut it against the insistent wind. The noisy pub is crowded with villagers and cadets looking for a Saturday escape. I spotted Dane at the bar earlier trying his luck with a second-year healer, and Riddick has already fought off three separate attempts to pilfer the three chairs we've saved across the table for the flyers. The group of us visited a few temples after lunch, but the flyers have been gone for hours, worshiping. If they're not back soon, we'll miss the last wagons back to campus. "Ryerson had my own dagger at my throat," Rhys says, shaking her head like she still can't believe it. "I always knew he was powerful, but I never realized he could..."
She drifts off. "Kill everyone in the room without getting up from his seat?" I finish for her, lifting my lavender lemonade to take a sip.
"And he thinks I need to know how to kill him."
The normally sweet drink tastes bitter in my throat. Maybe he slipped on the border.
But he isn't gone. One mistake does not equal losing your entire soul.
"Exactly," she nods. "Have you always known that?"
"Yep," I set my mug down. "Well, not always, but definitely after he busted into my room and killed Orin and the others during our first year."
"What are we discussing?" Kat asks, setting a mug down on the table and taking the seat directly across from me. She shrugs out of her snow-covered jacket as Marin and Traeger do the same.
"Ryerson's ability to wipe out, well, everyone," Riddick answers, taking his coat off Marin's seat as Sawyer moves his crutches to lean them against the wall behind him.
"Ah," Marin settles in next to Kat and looks her way. "That's kind of new, right?" Kat stares down into her mug.
"He wasn't as powerful when we..."
She cuts herself off and takes a drink. "Our signets can grow," I say to fill the awkward silence. "We spend our lives honing them and figuring out our limits. A third year is way more powerful than a first, just like a colonel can wipe the floor magically with a lieutenant."
"And he never scares you?"
Kat stares at me over the table.
"That's what you said yesterday. He never scares you."
"I get scared for him. But I haven't been scared of him since threshing." I run my finger along the top of my mug.
"Because your lives are connected."
She tilts her head like she's trying to understand.
"Because he'd never hurt me."
I take another drink. "He had his reasons for wanting me dead and, instead, taught me how to strike a death blow on the mat. And that was way before threshing."
"Speaking of signets, I'm starting to worry,"
Rhee quickly changes the subject.
"Sloane is a siphon. Evelyn began wielding fire last week, and Baylor has manifested farsight."
"Like Liam."
"But Lynx and Arik haven't manifested yet, and the clock is ticking," Rhee finishes.
What happens if they don't manifest on your timeline? Traeger asks.
The magic builds up and we kind of explode.
Riddick makes the correlating motion with his hands. But it's the end of January. We have months before it gets dangerous.
Vi didn't manifest until, what, May?
Riddick asks me. I blink, remembering the first time Zayden kissed me against the foundation walls. It was actually December, I just didn't realize it.
That doesn't comfort me, Rhys says, frowning over her mug. The last thing we need is Lynx or Arik exploding on us.
My chest tightens.
Remind me not to stand next to either of them in formation,
Kat drawls.
Better than one of them manifesting as an intrinsic,
Riddick mutters.
Could you imagine executing?
No, Rhys snaps, then shudders. I can't, and neither should you. She glances at Marin.
So, how is Temple?
Our offerings were received, Marin answers with an easy smile. I believe Amari will watch over my brothers in Erasia. I really can't thank your family enough for taking them in, Rhi.
Are you kidding me? Rhi waves her off. My mother loves kids, and my dad is thrilled to have two little boys running around the house. I'm really sorry they couldn't stay here with you, though.
Marin drops her gaze.
Me too,
but Basgaeth isn't exactly friendly for raising kids.
Kat rubs her shoulder. Your temples to Malak and Dune are disproportionately large compared to the other gods here,
Traeger notes, leaning back in his chair.
Except Amari, of course.
It's a regional thing, Sawyer answers, pushing up on the arms of his chair and readjusting his weight. He seems more comfortable wearing the new wood and metal prosthesis he's been working on, but hasn't been up for discussing it, so we haven't pushed.
This close to Basgaeth, war and death are on most minds.
So true, Riddick agrees.
Your scribes don't pray to Hedion for wisdom?
Traeger asks me, leaving his ale untouched long enough for Kat to reach over and steal it with a sly smile.
Knowledge and wisdom are two different things, I answer. Scribes are careful not to ask for what should be earned.
So you weren't a frequent patron when studying to enter that quadrant?
He scoots his chair in when some drunk cadets try to squeeze past behind him and side-eyes Kat for stealing his drink. But there's a tilt to his lips.
My mother was never temple-minded, which is odd considering you'd think she'd favor Dune,
and I preferred to spend what worship time I had in Amari's temple.
I glanced down at my nearly empty mug.
And then, once my father died, I frequented Malak's, though I probably spent more time yelling at him than praising.
I personally prefer Zanal, Riddick adds. You can get through any situation with luck.
And ours must have run out because here comes the wing leader, Rhi notes with a quick glance my way. The flyers look over their shoulders and we all quiet as Dane waits for a group of cadets to walk by before reaching the corner of our table.
Vi. He still has that flat, tortured look in his eyes, and I hate that I can't take it away.
Dane?
My hands tighten on my mug.
I'd rather he be a dick again, even obnoxious in his certainty, over this hollow version of himself.
Can I talk to you?
His attention sweeps over the others at the table.
Alone?
All right. I push away from the table, leaving behind my lemonade, and follow Dane into the dim, deserted hallway that leads to the pub's private rooms. My stomach clenches as he pivots to face me.
I spent the last few days reconning the security on Dad's quarters, and there's no way to sneak other people in without getting caught.
He slides his hands into the pockets of his flight jacket. My heart sinks.
You won't help me.
I told you I would, and I will. His mouth tightens. It's just going to require you to trust me enough to let me retrieve the research and bring it out myself. Preferably tomorrow night, since my father will be gone.
Shit. All he'd have to do is hand that research over to his father and Dane would be back at his good graces. My only assurance that wouldn't happen had been going with him. The history between us, both good and bad, thickens the air.
It's up to you, he says with a hint of a shrug. Either you trust me or you don't.
It's not just that, I rush.
There are so many ways this could go wrong. If they catch you with it, or the cadets who constantly follow Zayden and me spot you handing something over secretively.
I've got that figured out, he interrupts like I've insulted him. What's your choice?
I weigh the pros and cons in less than a heartbeat, then sigh. There's a secret compartment under my father's desk in the study. The latch is in the far back of the center drawer of my mother's. He nods.
You'll have it by Monday morning.
For better or worse, my fate rests in the hands of Dane Atos. An excerpt from Recovered Correspondence of Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale to Violet Sorengale. My brightest light, I meant to prepare you, but only had time for half the lessons you'll need, half the history, half the truth. And now time runs short. I failed Brennan the day I watched him walk the parapet, failed Mira when I could not stop her from following. But I fear my death will fail you. Your mother and I trust no one, and neither can you. Chapter 17.
Thaddeus Nation.
Captain Fitzgibbons reads from the dais the next morning, his voice carrying over the formation in the snow-packed courtyard as he holds the death roll in front of him.
Nadia Axel. Caressa Tomney.
Hearing the names of every member in active service who has died the previous day takes longer than the typical quadrant death roll. But I appreciate the change. It feels right to honor those losing their lives. It also serves to remind me that though Major De Vera has called a moratorium on killing one another within our walls, there's an enemy just waiting to do so the second we leave. There's an enemy who thinks I'm going to come to her.
Melina Charleston.
Captain Fitzgibbons continues as the icy wind gusts, tearing at the scroll and stinging the tips of my nose and ears.
And Ruford Sharna.
I blink. From Third Wing? Riddick's head swings left, as do Quinn's and Imogen's in front of us.
Fell from his seat during maneuvers yesterday, Arik says from behind us. According to their tail section, Haim couldn't see to catch him in the snow.
It was an accident. Somehow that makes it feel even worse.
We commend their souls to Malik, Captain Fitzgibbons says,
and a few announcements later, formation breaks. We all head toward the dormitory wing, and Sloane grabs my elbow as we reach the door. I need to give you something, she says, staring at the ground. Follow me? Sure. Talking to me is at least a start. She leads me through the rotunda, up into the commons, and to our small quadrant library on the right. It's empty this time of morning, and I wait at the last group of study tables as she quickly ducks behind the first set of tall bookshelves.
You can look at me, you know, I unbutton my flight jacket.
My mother made her choice. You didn't. Not exactly. Sloane pushes a loaded library cart out of the aisle. I felt her power. I could have rejected it, stopped it even. She rolls the cart directly in front of me. But I wanted the wards up, wanted to live. So I let it happen. She ends on a whisper. That's a pretty valid emotion, especially considering that my mother had overseen the execution of hers. And I'm not angry. Did you know that I have archives duty? She interrupts, crouching down to the bottom shelf of the cart. I thought it was kind of fitting, seeing as Liam always went with you when you had it. Do you like it? I manage to ask as my throat squeezes in on itself. Well, this morning, it gave me a chance to see Jacinia. She stands, pulling a large black canvas bag with her. Thank you. I sling the straps of the bag over my shoulder, noting its exceptional weight. She nods, then finally drags her gaze to meet mine. It wasn't out of revenge, I swear. I'm sorry I didn't stop her. My hands clasp around the thick canvas straps,
knowing she isn't talking about Jacinia.
I'm glad you didn't. Powering the stone was going to take someone's life. If I had succeeded, Zayden, Taryn, Sigale, and I would all be dead. The world needs Brennan. Arik is irreplaceable, and I wouldn't trade you for any ward, Sloane. My mother made the choice she had to. You were the tool, but she gave her own life. Her next breath shakes. Anyway, Jacinia said to tell you that two of the tomes were her selection, and the other was passed along to her from leadership first thing this morning. Dane. A smile spreads across my face. Not only did he come through, but he did it in a way that no one potentially watching either of us would suspect. I hold the bag tighter. This could be my father's final body of work. Thank you. Rumor is you're headed northward. Sloane folds her arms. Unfortunately, that rumor may be true, I grimace. Her face puckers. Seems an odd place to search, given how cold it is. Don't know about Taryn, but Thort hates the cold. I nod. Makes sense, since Thort is a Red. Many of their line's ancestral hatching grounds were along the limestone cliffs at the edge of the Dunis River. My gut tells me north is the wrong direction, but Taryn doesn't mind the cold, and most Browns prefer it, so maybe Grady is onto something. And Darna isn't a big fan of snow either, but maybe she isn't stereotypical of her kind. I hope for all our sakes he is, Sloane says. Me too. But I can't ignore the little voice of intuition insisting we should head south. When I get the package back to my room, any hope I'd felt since finding Dad's research slips into pure frustration as I unwrap it from its parchment to find the locking mechanism that holds the thick, leather-bound book closed. It's a 6-letter lock, and if I get the answer wrong, there are 6 vials of ink spaced equidistantly around the edges of the paper, ready to destroy whatever my father left inside. Even worse, there's a rune in the center that looks suspiciously like the one that makes things end badly if magic tampers with a lock. Definitely need to spend more time studying runes. I pick up the scrap piece of parchment Dad had stashed in a roll beneath the lock and read his formal handwriting again. First love is irreplaceable. Fuck. Nothing Dad wrote was ever this simple, so what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Are we wasting time by overthinking this? It's obviously Lilith, right?
Riddick asks as we descend the steps into the pit a few days later. Dad would have wanted me to overthink, and if I'm wrong, we ruin whatever's in there. I tuck my jacket under my arm and scan the bottom of the amphitheater in hopes of seeing Zayden.
Maybe we're not thinking fatherly enough, Ree muses.
Good idea. So maybe it's Brent.
Riddick counts on his fingers. Never mind, that has too many letters.
Mira's too short, but what about Violet?
Honestly, it's not like my dad to make it about himself. Both Lilith and Violet are too obvious. We pass by the infantry already seated in the middle of the terraced rows and spot Calvin, the squad leader of one of the infantry units we'd been paired with during RSC. I nod, and he returns the gesture.
Fine. Then who was Brennan's first love?
Riddick asks as we near the bottom of the steps.
There's 9 years between us. It's not like he was filling me in on his romantic exploits.
I pause as Riddick shuffles into his seat beside Marin.
Though I do remember Mira saying he'd been in a relationship with a rider a year or two older than him.
Guess that runs in the family. Riddick shucks his jacket.
Are you guys still trying to figure out the password to open that damned book?
Kat asks, leaning forward and earning a backward glance from the first years seated ahead of us.
Obviously, or they wouldn't be talking about it, Traeger says, resting his elbows on the rise behind him and leaning back.
Space much?
Nev shoves his arm off the rise with her boot.
What book?
The one Violet's father left her that everyone seems to think might have some information about where Andana's kind went. Kat answers. I shoot her a look and she shrugs. What? No one on the squad is going to hand you over, and you obviously need some more opinions before you're comfortable enough to actually try and input a password. Fair point, but still. Fine. Who's Mira's first love? Rhi asks, her gaze darting between Evelyn, Kai, and Baylor, who are seated as far apart as possible. I think, tilting my head and fastening the conduit's bracelet over the raw band of skin around my wrist. An hour of wielding a day is definitely helping me pull down more precise strikes, but my body is over it. I'm not sure she's ever really been in love. Or if she has, she's never said anything to me about it. You hadn't even seen Zayden when your dad met Malik. Riddick stares at me and sighs with complete exaggeration. Hello, who is your first love? Oh, that's not happening. I set my hands in my lap and notice more infantry pouring in above us. Nothing like being humbled in front of an audience. My father couldn't stand the first guy I really dated and never knew about the second. Arik turns his entire torso around to look at me. How many letters? I narrow my eyes. 6. He lifts 2 sandy brown eyebrows. I mean, it fits. Absolutely not. Heat stings my cheeks. Hold on. Riddick's head swings between the two of us. Is the first year entitled to information we don't have? Good afternoon. Zayden's voice fills the amphitheater as he strides in from a tunnel on the right, dressed in sparring gear that immediately has all my attention. Surprisingly, Garrick is at his side. Ooh, Imogen is going to love having class today. Ow! Riddick reaches for the back of his head. Riders, if you'll take your positions as you did last class, Zayden motions to the rings of cobblestone outside the mat. Hopefully, no one gets performance anxiety because, as you can see, he gestures to the seats behind us. We have a full house today. Not sleeping well? I ask him, noting the circles beneath his eyes. Abandoning our coats, my squad heads for the edge of the mat, mirrored by first wing. A certain hazel-eyed rider kept me up last night talking. He turns and says something to Garrick, who nods. Which I didn't mind, since my bed is too cold without you physically in it, and too quiet without you screaming my name. Oh, he wants to play. A corner of my mouth lifts. Game on. I miss Aracia. Miss sleeping next to you. Find a way to sneak me in, and I'll keep that bed at precisely the right temperature for you to get some rest. I roll my shoulders and stretch out my arms, just like my squad mates are doing. If I find you in my bed, there's no resting. Trust me. Zayden turns toward the front of the mat, bracing his feet apart and folding his beautifully toned arms. Lieutenant Tavis here is an incredibly powerful wind wielder. Don't forget that I know exactly how to knock you out for the night. I drop my arms, and Zayden shoots me a warning look, but the edges of his mouth curl up. And has agreed to let you try your best to bring him, he full-on smirks. Knock me out? You're usually the one begging for mercy a few orgasms in. Want to see begging? All I have to do is swirl my tongue around the tip of your... Zayden coughs like he swallowed a non-existent bug, and Garrick glances sideways at him. Down, he finally finishes. Lieutenant Tavis is willing to be your sparring dummy. He rolls his neck and chances a look in my direction. I simply smile. You started it. I'd give anything to be able to finish it. Zayden's fingers curl. You're going to be the death of me.
So you keep saying. I try not to think about the other ways that statement can be interpreted.
The fire wielder steps up first, and Garrick blows her own flame back at her.
That's unnerving, Riddick mutters, and Imogen masks a smile to my right.
We go as a team, Rhiannon says quietly by my side. They never said it had to be one-on-one. I nod.
Good idea.
Rhiannon relays orders quietly. The metallurgist, Lauren, learned from his last attempt, and within seconds, Garrick unclips the harness across his chest, and the scabbards fall from his back before he blasts Lauren to his ass with air.
You ready to join in, second squad?
Garrick asks, crooking his finger directly at Imogen.
You don't want anything to do with these.
She lifts her hands.
Why don't you put them on me and we'll see?
A corner of his mouth tilts, and a dimple pops in his cheek.
Oh, gods, just stop flirting and fuck already,
Riddick says. Every head slowly turns in his direction.
I said that out loud, didn't I?
He asks me in a hushed whisper.
Oh, yeah, you did, I reply, patting him on his back. Garrick's gonna blow you off the mat.
Now that I might enjoy, depending on the method he chooses,
Riddick winces.
I'm going to stop talking now.
You might want to keep the inside voices inside while we're up there,
I agree, following Rhiannon, Kat, and Quinn onto the mat, hauling Riddick behind me when he hesitates.
How exactly is this fair?
Garrick asks. We're never alone on the battlefield, are we? I tilt my head to the side. His face tightens, obviously, getting my meaning.
We fight as a squad, Rhiannon says from the center of our group, and Riddick moves to my left.
Solid point, Zayden retreats to the back of the mat. Begin.
Rhiannon lifts her hands beside me, and two of Garrick's daggers appear in them.
Nice,
Garrick admits with a slight smirk, then flicks his hands upward. Riddick steps forward simultaneously, throwing a wall of ice that's instantly battered by a gust of wind that rivals the tornado Tarn and I got caught up in. The edge of the ice chips at the assault, and chunks barrel my way. I spin toward our squad and tackle Ree to the ground as the ice flies overhead so near I can hear it whistle.
Too close,
Zayden bellows, and I look up to see him taking a step in Garrick's direction, rage etched in the hard lines of his face.
Don't! I'm fine!
I stagger to my feet as Quinn squeezes her eyes shut and turns her palm toward the sun.
He nearly took off your fucking head!
Zayden looks at Garrick in a way I've never seen, like his best friend has suddenly morphed into prey, and there's that cold edge in his eyes that prickles the hair at the back of my neck. My power rises in response, and I welcome it with open arms, savoring the quick rush of heat and the hum of energy in my veins. My head is still firmly attached. Through translucent ice, I see two Quins appearing on Garrick's sides.
Give me his blade.
I pivot toward Ree and hold out my right hand, which she promptly fills with Garrick's dagger. To my shock, Garrick stares at one Quin, then the other, and then his head pivots between the two quickly, repeatedly.
Cat.
You're going to have to be fast, Ree warns.
No worries there.
The second the wind dies, I step around Riddick's ice, then throw Garrick's own dagger close enough to scare him but not cause any real damage. Heat flushes my skin as power builds, demanding to be set free. His hand whips upward, and a wind gust knocks the blade off course, causing it to land about 20 feet to the right behind him.
Fine, that works too.
He starts to redirect, bringing his hand toward the front of his body again. But mine is already skyward. The conduit siphons off just enough power to give me the control I need, and I release the rest, pulling the power downward in a precise flick of my wrist. Lightning scorches the air, rending it with a flash of brilliance that strikes true, flaring bright as it spears from the sky, then disappearing as quickly as it came. The thunder swallows a few of the gasps and screams from the seats to my right, but I keep my eyes on Garrick and my hand held skyward. His eyes widen at me.
You really did it.
I did. The conduit hums in my left hand.
Hate to tell you, Sorengale, but not only did you leave yourself exposed, you also missed,
he grins.
Did I?
I look pointedly to the smoking hilt of his melted blade behind him. And he follows my line of sight, visibly tensing when he spots the ruined dagger.
If I wanted you dead, you'd be dead.
By Malik, I fucking love you,
Zayden says. And if I'm exposed, fine. The rest of my squad is alive, I shrug. Zayden's gaze cuts to mine. Garrick turns back toward me, his mouth hanging slightly agape, and someone begins to slowly clap from the top of the steps. I look up, along with just about everyone else, and my balance wobbles.
No, no, no.
Sandy brown hair falls recklessly over his left eye as he starts down the steps. And I know it's illogical, but I swear I can see just how green those eyes are from all the way down here.
Help Arik hide, I tell Zayden. Now!
Done. A royal herald puffs out his chest from the edge of the back row.
His Royal Highness Prince Haldin.
Every cadet rises to their feet.
Sit, he says loud enough for his voice to carry over the amphitheater and motions downward with his hands. I know that look on his face all too well.
He's perfected an expression of relatable annoyance at the fanfare, when really he lives for this shit.
Impressive, he tells me, passing the first row and the rock wall that separates it from the arena and stepping onto cobblestone.
Breathe. Just breathe.
Your Highness, you'd be safer in the seats, Garrick starts.
And yet I think the view is much better from right here.
He slides his hands into the pockets of his professionally tailored dark blue infantry uniform and smiles.
Please, don't let me stop you.
Garrick looks back. I'm guessing at Zayden, but I'm too busy keeping my gaze locked on Haldin so I don't draw any accidental attention to Arik by checking. Garrick nods and looks to the line of riders.
Next.
Our squad walks off the mat, and instead of filing in with the second ears, I take the empty place next to Haldin, noting that one of the two guards stationed close behind him is Captain Anna Winshire. She isn't just the infantry liaison for the quest squad. She's Haldin's. I'd been naive to assume he'd removed himself from the task force. And if Haldin ever realizes that Zayden is the reason his twin isn't breathing, well, he won't be as understanding as Arik.
This is bad.
What are you doing here? I ask, glancing over at him. He doesn't seem as tall as I remember. Definitely a couple of inches shorter than Arik. But he's just as strikingly beautiful as the last time I saw him. His high cheekbones, the mouth tilted in a permanent smirk, and the perfect proportion to his features are enough to turn heads. But his eyes are the real showstopper. They're as green as summer leaves. But man, do they wander.
Learning, of course, like everyone else in this arena.
He flashes a smile, and the edges of his eyes actually crinkle.
Never figured you for a rider black, but power looks good on you.
Don't. I shake my head and face the match. Garrick blasts the remnants of Riddick's wall away with a gust of wind, and Caroline Ashton takes the mat, bringing the fire wielder with her. Zayden's gaze narrows as it jumps between Haldin and me. And then he turns his attention to the sparring match. I don't mean in the arena. I hook the conduit to the strap at my hip. What are you doing at Besgaeth? It's not exactly alumni weekend.
Please don't say going northward with us.
Straight to business? I feel the weight of his stare as he studies my profile. You aren't going to ask how I've been? My brother's missing, you know.
He sounds exactly 0% worried.
Is he? I fold my arms. Or did Cam just need some space from your ego?
Both Caroline and the fire wielder fly backward, landing on their asses before sliding to the edge of the mat.
What made second squad's assault effective was the use of mind work,
Garrick reminds the first wing squad.
Quinn and Kat worked together to fuck with my head, giving Sorengale enough time to strike.
Not that she needed it, Traeger calls out, and he's right. I could have struck at any moment. I simply waited until I could be certain of my accuracy.
A smile quirks at the corners of Zayden's mouth.
Seriously, though, Haldin tisks.
No hello. Not even a compliment on the tailoring of my uniform. Or the fresh haircut I'm heartbroken by.
You'd have to own a heart to break it, I immediately counter. And the only hair I remember is your professor's covering your face when I walked in on her riding you.
It was auburn, right?
The next batch heads up, this time armed with flyers as Zayden changes position, moving slightly to the left.
Ouch, you wound me, Halden rubs his chest.
Yes, I cheated.
But you have to remember I was still suffering from the loss of my twin. I was stupid, thoughtless, cruel, I suggest.
Grief doesn't excuse any of that. Never did.
He sighs. And here I thought you'd thank me for offering to step in and agree with you in regard to your upcoming mission.
How so? My brow scrunches.
He reaches into his uniform pocket and retrieves a missive bearing the broken wax seal of Viscount Takaris.
Here. Grady is taking too long and has yet to present a clear path that satisfies my father. I like this option.
I take the parchment and my eyes widen.
It's addressed to me.
Don't get caught up in the details, he shrugs unapologetically.
My mouth tightens as I open the folded parchment.
Cadet Sorengale, as per our agreement, here are your requested tomes. I've also handpicked a selection from my personal library I hope you'll find educational. In regard to your search, King Cortlin of Deverelli has agreed to a single meeting, noble blood only, for the reasonable price of the Amelian Citrine. Queen Mariah has agreed to gift the gem to him, but will not be responsible for its retrieval from its display in Anka. Please let me know when you have the citrine in hand, so I can schedule our visit. In service, Viscount Takaris.
You're doing a library exchange with the man first in line to the Peromish throne? Guess you didn't leave the scribes entirely behind.
Halden muses as I finish reading.
You shouldn't be reading my messages. I fold the parchment and tuck it into an empty dagger sheath along my ribs.
Lucky for you, I am.
Lucky? You're kidding.
I scoff as Garrick sends another rider flying.
I wouldn't kid about your upcoming mission. Or you.
He looks my way.
I did some research.
You mean you had someone do your research? I counter.
Same thing,
he smirks.
The Amelian Citrine is a lesser magic amplifier worn by one of the members of the First Drift. If you're willing to retrieve it, I'm willing to order Grady to change courses.
It's not that simple. Anka is an occupied territory.
I'm just not sure if it's still occupied or one of the cities they drained and moved on from. Either way, it's beyond the wards, and even going there is a risk to Zayden.
Like I said, if you want to go, I'll step in on your behalf.
I owe you at least that, and title overpowers rank every day. He clears his throat.
Tell me, is it true what they say? You and Ryerson?
He says Zayden's name with cringeworthy disgust.
If you're asking if I'm in love with him, then the answer is wholeheartedly yes.
I glance Zayden's way and find his eyes already on me.
If you're prodding to see if we're still together, then let me assure you we're adhering to the code of conduct in the way you never bothered to. You can report that to your father.
I wasn't asking for my father, Vi. I was asking for me.
You what? I forget all pretense of watching the sparring match, giving Halden my full attention.
I never told you I was sorry.
His face softens, and his gaze skims over my face like he's noticing every detail that's changed.
And I should have.
If you're not with Ryerson, I am in love with him, I bristle. I haven't so much as thought about you in years. Don't chase just because you like a challenge, you'll lose.
Halden scoffs.
Anyone who's ever dated a rider knows their first priority. Their first love is their dragon.
Once you accept that, another man hardly feels like a challenge.
My lips part. He's right. Our first priorities are our dragons. They're irreplaceable.
Besides, with all this time we have coming up together on this mission, I thought maybe you'd at least be willing to have a quiet dinner with me. His smirk slips. Tell me you don't let your non-boyfriend control you. Allow me to apologize properly, the way I should have 3 years ago.
He lifts a hand toward the loosened strands of my braid, but never makes it.
Shadows blast straight through the wards and hit Haldin in the chest like a battering ram, sending the Crown Prince of Navarre flying backward, straight into the rock wall.
Shit.
An excerpt from The Last Admiral, a memoir by Admiral Levian Crosslight.
I cannot imagine sustainable life beyond the Emerald Sea. No ship has ever survived the tempests that form its ice-tipped waves, and the only sailors who return from her exploration do so defeated. Chapter 18.
Haldin! I rush to kneel by his side, and the shadow evaporates like it was never there. Are you all right?
My prince!
Anna jumps to the cobblestone, panic filling her eyes as his second guard joins her.
Oh, Haldin, are you—
Not just his guard? My eyebrows rise as I glance up at her hair. Yep, redheads are definitely his type.
Haldin waves her off as he visibly fights for breath, and both guards retreat.
Thank you, Malik. Zayden didn't kill him. There isn't even a crack in the rock above his head.
Give it a second, and you'll be able to breathe, I promise Haldin, praying his ribs aren't broken. Footsteps approach from behind me, and a wave of glittering onyx wraps around my mind like a caress.
Sorry about that, Zayden says, his tone implying otherwise. I was blocking a potentially lethal blow to the first year and seemed to have knocked the wind right out of you.
I arch an eyebrow and slowly look over my shoulder at him.
Seriously? He was going to touch you.
The glacial rage in his eyes has mine widening.
Right, because that's the mature response.
Haldin sucks in a breath, then another.
Quite all right. It wasn't a response. It was. It simply was.
Zayden crouches behind me as Haldin pushes himself to sit upright.
Let's get three things straight, Your Highness. First, I have remarkable hearing thanks to the shadows at your very feet. Second, I don't control Violet. Never have, never will. But third, and most importantly, he lowers his voice, she really, honestly, hasn't thought about you. At least not since the second she set eyes on me. I'm going to fucking kill him.
A-I-M-S-I-R. An hour later, I'm still seething as I sit with Rhi on my bed, turning the fingernail-size bronze dials until each letter is visible in the book's locking mechanism. My finger hovers over the tiny lever that will either open the book or destroy it.
I can't do it.
We could talk about how your non-boyfriend threw your clearly ex-boyfriend into the wall instead, Rhi says. Or even chat about how you've never mentioned you were in a relationship with the prince.
Never seemed important, I shrug. He was just Haldin to me, like Arik is Arik.
And I promised myself I wouldn't give him an ounce of my headspace when he turned out to be the asshole everyone warned me he was.
A prince? A duke? Clearly you have a type, she teases. Did Zayden know?
I shake my head. Haldin didn't have Zayden arrested, but there was a definite gleam of promised revenge in his eyes when he strode up the stairs with his guards. Class ended shortly after that.
That explains the wall, she muses.
Zayden's complete and utter lack of control over his temper because he's Venon is what explains the wall. but I'm not exactly going to say that to her, so I change the subject.
I'm sir. It's the right answer, I say mostly to myself. My father's world rotated on the axis of my mother, and they didn't meet until their third year. Her first real love would have been Imser, and she was irreplaceable. Our entire family's happiness rested on her health and survival.
You don't have to convince me.
Rhi sits with one leg bent under her and her hands outstretched toward the book.
I rest the tip of my finger against the lever. You think you can save my ass if I'm wrong? I've never tried to retrieve 6 vials worth of liquid, or any liquid, but I think I can grab enough that at least all of your father's work won't be ruined. She flexes her fingers, then sighs. And if that rune activates, well, there can't be too much power stored there. Probably just enough to destroy the book.
Probably, I nod. I can tell you I'd rather climb the gauntlet again than be wrong about this.
Then don't be wrong. I'm not. Lilith is the obvious answer, and therefore it's the wrong one. Anyone else would have entered it without a second thought and ruined the book. No, he left this for me. I press the lever. It sinks into the mechanism, and my heart stumbles over its own beat when I hear the metallic click of the device unlocking. The book opens, and the 6 vials of ink pivot to lie flat along the pages, their contents perfectly sealed.
Thank you, Zanal.
I think that one might be better directed to Hedion, but I'll take whatever god is with us, Rhi says, scooting closer as I rotate the book so we can both read. A History of the Second Krovlin Uprising, draft by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale, I read, smiling at the familiar sight of his formal handwriting.
All of that for a history text, Rhi shakes her head.
You Sorengales are something else. I flip the next page and suck in a sharp breath at the first words.
Dear Violet.
It's written, but I can hear his voice say it so clearly in my head that my eyes immediately sting. Not just a history text, then. Rhi wraps her arm around my shoulders. How about I give you some time with your dad? I'll knock when we need to head out for flight maneuvers. I nod silently in thanks, and Rhi leaves through the door, closing it behind her. I want to read it all instantly, yet simultaneously limit myself to a single line so I can save another for tomorrow, and then the day after, like I have with my mother's journals. I could make it last, keep him with me as long as possible. But I need the knowledge now, so I lift the book onto my lap and begin.
Dear Violet, it's my most sincere hope that you are reading this by my side, laughing at the glorious mess that is a first draft. But I fear that may not be the case. If I now walk alongside Malik with your brother, then guard this manuscript carefully. But if the worst has happened and your mother has joined us, then you must protect this knowledge with your very life. Within these pages, you'll find my careful study of the Second Krovlin Uprising. But my daughter, remember what I taught you about history. It is simply a collection of stories, each influenced by those that happened before, and steering the ones to come. I wrote this study so it could be read by others, but understood by you. If time is sweet, peruse at leisure. You'll find the connection between the uprising and the pursuit of Feathertales to be both alarming and enlightening. But if time has indeed run out, and you seek the weapon to defeat those you've only learned about through lore, then abandon your robes and ride for Cordon. You have always struggled with Krovlish, but I made sure Dane would be capable should you need him. Should he not choose to cross the parapet this summer? If he follows in the footsteps of his father, you must find the strength to let go of your affection for him. From Cordon, book passage to Devarelli, you will be safe beyond the reach of magic there.
and quietly seek the merchant, Narelle Anselm. Take her the rarest item you possess. Be sure it's truly exceptional to be given what you need. Do not send another in your stead. Should you travel under the banner of Navarre, beware their king. He bears grudges and speaks only in profit. I'm so sorry this falls to you, my brightest light. Trust only Mira. Love, Dad.
I read the page over and over, committing it to memory even as my mind races. How would he have known a merchant in Devarelli? Seek the weapon. Did he know about Andarna? About the rest of her kind? For the first time in my life, it dawns on me that maybe I didn't know my father as well as I thought I did. Narelle Anselm. I relay the information to Taryn and Andarna. Safe beyond the reach of magic? I ask them, then fold the parchment and hide it back in the book.
There is no magic beyond the continent. It is why we dragons remain, Taryn tells me. Why it is surprising the Irids left our shores.
I know what to bring with us, Andarna adds.
I have come to the same conclusion, Taryn growls, but do not wish to spend my time with nursery gossips.
Do you truly think the Isles are our best chance of finding your kind? I ask.
I think it's a better plan than flying north until we expire, Andarna answers.
Agreed, Taryn chimes in. If the captain is so convinced, then split the squad in two. But we will head for Devarelli.
Someone knocks. I startle, then quickly lock the book and shove it under my pillow before crossing to the door and opening it. Zayden stands